We've all seen the same photos showing what went on in the Abu Ghraib prison, but we're using different words to describe it. Mistreatment, abuse, atrocities, torture. It's even been compared to a hazing. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has these thoughts on why we're struggling to find the right words for what we've been seeing.
In a way, the photos from the Abu Ghraib prison speak for themselves. But it's hard to assign a moral significance to the acts unless we can attach a name to them. The French and Italian papers have been describing the affair under the running head, the torture scandal. And that's the word that's being used by the British papers on both the left and the right. The Red Cross report that was disclosed on Monday hedged that description only slightly when it described the treatment of detainees as tantamount to torture. The word torture has appeared in the American press, too. When The New Yorker ran a photo of a naked prisoner being threatened by dogs, it captioned it, "Torture of Iraqi Prisoners." And a few columnists called the events atrocities, which is somehow a lot stronger than saying that they're atrocious. But most Americans have been more circumspect than that. When Secretary Rumsfeld was asked about the charges of torture at his news briefing, he said, "I'm not going to address the torture word." And most American newspapers and news broadcasts have been sticking with generic terms like abuse and mistreatment. In fact, some people on the right have balked even at those words. In an opinion piece in the Los Angeles Times last Sunday, Midge Dechter referred to the treatment of detainees as a nasty hazing. And Rush Limbaugh described it as no different than what happens at a skull and bones initiation. "I'm talking about people having a good time," he said. "You ever hear of emotional release? You ever heard of the need to blow off some steam?" And here in San Francisco, I heard a pair of shock jocks the other day describing the prison as Abu Grabass and talking about the treatment in a way that made it sound like Animal House 3, Bluto in Baghdad. Strictly speaking, what took place in the prison probably does fit the Geneva Convention's definition of torture, which is pretty broad. It covers the infliction of physical or mental pain or suffering for any number of reasons. But people's choice of words here doesn't have a lot to do with what President Bush calls legalisms. The American media have other reasons for describing the events differently from the Europeans. They may want to extenuate the abuses, or at least avoid the criticisms they might get if they use what Rumsfeld calls the torture word. But it's also because torture and torturer don't seem quite the right words for what's going on in those photos. Torture may be familiar in the modern world, but it's also remote. The only torturers we see up close are the ones in the movies. It suggests an aestheticized ritual, the Bach playing in the background during the torture scenes in Battle of Algiers. And the word torturer brings to mind a cosmopolitan, usually foreign figure, whose cruelty is ironically counterpoised by a polished, even effete manner. Laurence Olivier in Marathon Man, Gert Frobe in Goldfinger, or the Muhammad Khan character in Lives of a Bengal Lancer, telling Gary Cooper, "We have ways of making men talk." Or you think of Vincent Price in Almost Anything, not foreign exactly, but astringent, urbane, and talking like somebody who's lived most of his life abroad. There are no middle-class, middle-American torturers in our gallery, much less torturers with the pudding countenances of those GIs who were working at McDonald's just a year ago. And the humiliations they were inflicting didn't have much in common with the rituals of pain and submission that the word torture brings to mind. They went down another road, even if it fell off just as sharply. That's what creates the sense of incongruity we feel when we see these photos, I think. The actions may have been far from Delta House hijinks, but you wouldn't know it from the clowning poses the GIs were striking. In an odd way, in fact, Dechter and Limbaugh have got it right despite themselves. Not that there's any defense for describing this as hazing. That's a deeply dishonest word for what went on. The prisoners weren't in a position to resign from the club, and they weren't about to be given membership pins when Pledge Week was over. You may as well say that the L.A. police were hazing Rodney King. But if the word hazing was chosen to palliate the offenses, it also makes them seem more familiar. Hazing's the sort of thing that any adolescent with a normal libido might be capable of, and worse if the circumstances permit. As the Stanford psychologist Phil Zimbardo showed in a famous experiment more than 30 years ago, it doesn't take a lot to transform a group of healthy, intelligent male college students into sadistic prison guards, provided somebody in authority gives them the nod. It's striking that we don't really have a good word for this sort of thing. Not that it isn't right to call it abuse or mistreatment, but those are vague words that blur the moral distinctions we're trying to capture. And we may yet find out that the behavior extended to the sorts of fingernail-pulling barbarities that not even Rumsfeld would have any qualms about describing as torture. But while words like torture and atrocity are well-suited to convey the alien inhumanity of the decapitation video that surfaced this week, they don't really help us to grasp the disturbing familiarity of the faces in the pictures from Abu Ghraib, the kind of cruelty that isn't inhuman, but all too.
Jeff Nunberg is a Stanford linguist and author of the new book, Going Nuclear.